Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
Hello and welcome to DW's Africa Link program this Monday, December the 12th. I'm Crispin Mwakideu.
And I'm Sela Oneko.
Coming up in today's program, Gambia faces an uncertain future after defeated President Yahya Jammeh says he plans to petition the election results.
And we've got some surprised reactions on social media on that and some who say, I told you so.
And we also follow up on the protests in Cameroon where English-speaking regions are accusing the government of using too much French. Stick around for these stories, plus the trial of IMF chief Christine Lagarde, which began today in France. But first, let's bring you up to date with other stories from around the world.
I'm Shay Meineke with DW News. The battle for the besieged Syrian city of Aleppo is nearing its end, the Syrian Observatory for Human Rights has said on Monday. The group has reported that forces loyal to Syrian President Bashar al-Assad have forced out nearly 90% of major rebel groups from key districts in the city. African heads of state have said they would travel to Gambia on Tuesday to persuade outgoing Gambian President Yahya Jammeh to concede defeat. Speaking to reporters, President-elect Adama Barrow said Jammeh doesn't have authority to reject the election results.
Yesterday, the outgoing president issued a statement to reject the results of the election, declared as invalid. I wish to inform you that the outgoing president has no authority to reject the result of the election, and I am now the president-elect. I urge him to change his current position and accept the verdict of the people.
In Nigeria, local media have reported that at least 60 people were killed by the collapse of a church in the southeast of the country. Many more are feared dead as the search for survivors continues. In Kenya, President Uhuru Kenyatta has slammed the International Criminal Court, calling it not impartial. In a speech marking the country's 53rd year of independence, Kenyatta said he would give serious thought over its membership in the ICC.
Our experience at the ICC demonstrated a glaring lack of impartiality in this institution. We have started to see many more nations openly recognizing that the ICC is not impartial. Some have withdrawn, others have considered that step. We will therefore need to give serious thought to our membership.
This news comes to you from DW, Germany's international broadcaster. The European Union and the West African country of Mali have agreed on a joint deal to curb illegal migration. The deal helps return Mali migrants from Europe back to the country, as well as improve border security for Mali and its neighbors. Also, German Defense Minister Ursula von der Leyen has called for the deployment of over 300 German soldiers to help Mali's government fight off rebel groups. Mali has experienced periodic flare-ups in fighting. In Turkey, hundreds of alleged members of the Kurdistan Workers' Party, the PKK, have been detained after police conducted raids across the country on Monday. This comes after a PKK splinter group claimed responsibility for the bombings in Istanbul on December 10th, when at least 44 people were killed and 150 others were injured. Turkey has cracked down on dissidents and pro-Kurdish parties after the failed coup attempt in July. And now in sports, Bundesliga champions Bayern Munich are to face off against Arsenal in the last 16 of the Champions League. This is the third time in five seasons the two clubs will face off, with the Bavarians dominating their English rivals in previous matches. Also, Borussia Dortmund will take on Portuguese giants Benfica, and Bayer Leverkusen will take on the always difficult Atletico Madrid. For more news and information, visit our website at dw.com. I'm Shay Meineke.
What's next for the Gambia? The opposition coalition led by President-elect Adama Barrow today called on President Yahya Jammeh to step down immediately. Jammeh surprised many after he initially conceded defeat. But in a surprise move on Friday, Jammeh said he totally rejects the results and plans to file a petition. African leaders are expected in Banjul tomorrow, Tuesday, as they seek to put pressure on Jammeh to hand over power peacefully. For more on what Gambia's future holds, Hilke Fischer has been speaking to Alex Vines, head of Africa program at Chatham House in London.
This is a slight compromise on his part from his outright rejection of the results. And I think this is a reflection of international pressure on him, the UN Security Council and its resolution that he should accept the results, but also the African Union, the Economic Community of West African States, Senegal, the US government, all have said accept the results. I'm not sure how the Supreme Court is going to proceed on this. I'm aware of a significant amount of international diplomacy now that is also going to be put on President Jammeh. There's a plan to send in Ellen Johnson Sirleaf and President Mahama of Ghana tomorrow to the Gambia. We will have to see.
Now, Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, as far as I understood, has already tried to get to Banjul, but actually her plane was not allowed to land in the country, so it seems...
Okay. Ellen Johnson Sirleaf never took off, because I've spoken to her aides. It never left Liberia. So the real story, from what I understand, is the plane never got landing rights at Banjul Airport, so it never took off. So it's slightly different from the reporting that gives the impression that she was in the middle of the sky or flying over Gambia in circles. That never happened.
The fact that she didn't get the landing rights, doesn't that mean that Jammeh doesn't really want to talk to ECOWAS or any other?
We've had a Security Council resolution. We've had the AU. We've had ECOWAS. We've had Senegal. We'll see. President Jammeh is under immense pressure here. And his disadvantage is he has very few friends, if any, anywhere. So this regional diplomacy, I think, would be very, very important. If President Mahama is involved too, that's obviously a good choice, given that President Mahama has just accepted a couple of days ago, last Friday, defeat in the elections in Ghana. And so carries that moral authority of a presidential candidate that has accepted defeat graciously from the polls.
Head of Africa Programme at Chatham House, Alex Vines.
And we've received a lot of reactions from people around Africa on our Facebook page, GW Africa, on this issue. So, for example, Nicolas Domanumbu wrote, "If Gambia wants democracy, they should provide immunities and protections to Yahya Jammeh like Ghana did to Rawlings." And he also wrote, "How can you be talking about the ICC before power is officially handed over to you?"
Nicholas is referring to a probe and also a Truth and Reconciliation Committee that Gambia's president-elect Adama Barrow spoke about.
That's right, and we'll be getting back to you with more comments from you, the listeners, later.
That's right. The Tapia affair. IMF chief Christine Lagarde was in court on Monday as her trial kicked off. Lagarde, one of the world's most powerful women, is being accused of negligence in a fraud case. More than €400 million were paid out to Bernard Tapie, a former business tycoon who owned Adidas sportswear maker while Lagarde was Minister of Finance. Tapie reportedly had connections to then-President Nicolas Sarkozy. Helen Sini has more on the story.
60-year-old Christine Lagarde is appearing before the Court of Justice of the Republic. It's a special tribunal that hears cases against ministers accused of wrongdoing in the discharge of their duties. Lagarde's on trial for her role in a €400 million state payout to businessman Bernard Tapie back in 2008. Tapie was the former owner of sportswear giant Adidas, and he sued the state for compensation after selling his stake in Adidas. At the time, Lagarde was France's finance minister, and she ordered that Tapie's long-running dispute with the state be resolved by arbitration. Lagarde denies any wrongdoing, arguing that she was acting in the state's interest when she authorised the massive payment to Tapie. Whatever the outcome of this trial, it risks damaging the image of Lagarde, a former corporate lawyer who's become one of the world's most powerful women. It also threatens the credibility of the International Monetary Fund, as Lagarde is the third IMF chief to face trial. If convicted, a maximum sentence could raise questions about her ability to continue as head of the IMF. A panel of 15, including 12 lawmakers from both the lower and upper houses of parliament, will hear the case.
Helen Sini with that report. To Cameroon now, where an uneasy calm has returned to the English-speaking regions after several weeks of violence. At least 10 people have been killed, hundreds wounded, and others arrested. Schools and universities remain closed while lawyers continue to protest the influence of the French language in the bilingual country. DW's Moki Kinzeka reports.
You allow government. Me, government can't come to begin and go. So they look at their own beginning and go. So now go.
They have equally condemned government. The official has.
What has befallen towns in the English-speaking regions of Cameroon continue to be the topic of discussion among many in Bamenda, capital of Cameroon's northwest region. Among those discussing the issue is 45-year-old businessman Congo Paul. He says he opened his shop at the Bamenda Central Market this Monday just to discover that all of his goods had been looted during the violent protests in the past days.
Let government engage in frank dialogue so as to tell the Anglophone the truth and sort out the problem of the Anglophone in good faith.
Last Thursday, the Cameroonian government dispatched at least 5,000 troops to Bamenda to maintain peace after angry crowds blocked Cameroon's prime minister, who had been sent by President Paul Biya to plead for a return to peace. The protesters stopped the singing of the national anthem, calling it a foreign song. They burned police stations, government cars, and public offices. Achidi Henry, a 56-year-old retired teacher, says the uprisings, which have been calmed by the troops, may resurface once the soldiers leave, and is urging Cameroon's President Paul Biya to use his good offices and solve the problem.
I propose that the president should not just send a delegation. If he cannot move to Bamenda or the regions that are striking, he should speak to them through the media. The world is a global village. He can appease them through that instead of sending people who maybe meet an angry mob, and that may instead cause them to keep behaving the wrong way.
And that report was compiled by Moki Kinzeka.
And we already had some reactions from the clashes that took place last week in Cameroon. And, for example, Charles Ongole from Uganda wrote that these clashes shouldn't be happening in the 21st century, since these were, of course, cultural lines drawn up by the colonial powers.
And it's interesting that that comment comes from Uganda, because they also had their own clashes very recently with this king who was arrested and some of his guards apparently killed by police officers in Uganda.
Yeah, but of course in Cameroon with these two different languages, that draws up some differences to cross. And somebody else, Sorel Kamdem, wrote that it's sad innocent people are dying in my country. So there is some conversation about it, but there's not that much going on social media about these clashes.
Let's maybe get back to Gambia, because it's very interesting what is happening there at the moment. It's one of the most popular topics, I understand, on Facebook and also in Africa at the moment. Jammeh refusing to now accept the election results.
Yeah, after he initially conceded defeat, and a couple of days later he said he's not accepting the results. And it caught some people by surprise. So, for example, Felix Pascal wrote that he didn't believe Jammeh's concession in the first place. And so he basically said, I told you so, everybody. And Ato Aidu commented, he must be out of his mind. Why did he accept the results at all?
I was just thinking and telling my colleague Isaac Mugabe that maybe he initially wanted to challenge the election results, because he thought that this is what maybe was expected of him. And then he said, okay, no, I accept them. And then later on, he said, oh, no, I deny, I reject these results. So now everybody is trying to put
after
pressure.
Some contemplation, yes.
Exactly.
And there's a lot of pressure also coming from, ECOWAS. Ellen Johnson Sirleaf from Liberia is heading there for negotiations, and the international communities also will also probably put pressure on it after the Security Council meeting. Topic. So,
That's right. There is a briefing today happening at the UN Security Council on the same topic.
Yes, and there also seems to be some fear among people, at least on our Facebook page, who think that this might lead to violence, this refusal of Jammeh to accept defeat. And so one user, Abram Daye, urged Gambians to stay off the streets and not to go backing Yahya Jammeh because he's out. So there's no need to put anybody in harm's way. He said, follow your new leader.
Well, if you have any opinions on the matter, either in Gambia or any other African story, just feel free to join the conversation on our Facebook page, DW Africa. And coming up in the next 15 minutes here at Africa Link, pressure mounts for Ghana's newly elected president Nana Akufo-Addo to deliver on his promises.
So me, I'm not expecting about 4 years or 8 years. If he couldn't perform his first year, then we'll at the same time use our Kokoboti power to show him.
Plus, we'll take a look at how Kenyans have marked their Independence Day.
Leipzig are also no longer the unbeaten team in the Bundesliga. To stay with Africa Link for a roundup of the Bundesliga later on. But let's begin in Ghana, where President-elect Nana Akufo-Addo has already started engaging with the current president, John Mahama, for a peaceful transition. Akufo-Addo is expected to be sworn in on January the 7th, 1 month after he won the election. He has promised to build factories all over the country. But as DW's correspondent Isaac Kalechi reports from Accra, expectations are high among Ghanaians.
Things are already shaping up for the incoming government under the president-elect Nana Akufo-Addo. He has formed a team which has been holding series of meetings with the current government for a smooth transition of power. Nana Addo is hoping for full cooperation from the current government.
I have so far received full cooperation from His Excellency the President, for which I thank him, and I hope and expect that it will so continue until the formal transfer of authority takes place on 7th January next year.
Current President John Mahama has assured his team will cooperate to ensure that full disclosure is made to the new elected government.
We've been here before, so we can be guided by our common experiences in managing transitions, as in 2001, 2005, 2009, and 2013, to ensure a peaceful and successful transition of power.
Meanwhile, on the streets of Accra, Ghanaians are expectant of drastic change once the new government takes charge. They have high expectations.
Every president says that I'll do this within a period, and we know that it is 4 years. So in the 4 years, we want to see that he has done all of them.
He didn't give any year that he can perform. He just promised that when he comes, he'll do this and that. So me, I'm not expecting about 4 years or 8 years. If he couldn't perform his first year, then we'll at the same time use our Kokoboti power to show him.
It appears there won't be any honeymoon for the new government once it takes over in less than a month's time. The government will come under a lot of scrutiny over its promises and is expected to deliver.
Isaac Kalechi reporting in Accra.
And we've had all kinds of comments on our Facebook page on the Ghanaian elections and on people, what kind of expectations they have from the new president or the president-elect at the moment. And some people have been congratulating Akufo-Addo, and other people have very little trust in him. But from the expectations, a couple of interesting comments we had, for example, from Kweku Asime, who says, the president may promise jobs, but it shouldn't all be on him. So he writes, we are an educated country. It's time that we start taking solutions from the experts and professionals in a study than expecting the president to do everything and know all the specifics.
I think with all the talk about the presidential candidates in elections, we do sometimes forget that it's actually a whole party or a government that we are voting into power, not just one man.
Yeah.
Although the president is, of course, the person who has the power to take executive decisions, for example, in a crisis situation.
Yeah, and he is, of course, the person who has to be held accountable for things. And so, for example, we have two comments, one from Agnes Teki, who asks Akufo-Addo to follow the example of John Magufuli's example and deal with corruption.
You're listening to DW's Africa Link.
Health check.
Mankind versus mosquito. The World Health Organization wants to eliminate malaria in at least 35 countries by 2030. Although there has been a lot of progress towards this goal, some countries recently have noted that case numbers are remaining constant or even rising. Julia Gross went to Ifakara Health Institute in Tanzania to find out more about the scientists' new idea to protect people from contracting malaria. Her report is now read by Neil King.
The sun is beginning to set in Ifakara, a town of 60,000 inhabitants at the heart of Tanzania. Like every day here, dozens of children and young men have gathered to play football on a dusty pitch. A 80% of the people in rural Tanzania do not have access to electricity, so people rush to cook, eat, shop, fetch water or wash their kids before it gets dark. Unfortunately, this behavior also puts them at risk of being bitten by mosquitoes and contracting malaria. Tanzania, and especially Ifakara, have come a long way in battling this deadly disease. One meaning of the name Ifakara is the place where you go to die. During the 1980s, a person living here would get an average 2,000 infectious mosquito bites per year. At any given time, 70% of the population had malaria parasites in their blood. But it was actually research done at the local Ifakara Health Institute that contributed to the adoption of universal coverage with bed nets in Tanzania and ultimately the rest of sub-Saharan Africa. Today, the average number of infectious mosquito bites in Ifakara is down to just 18 per year, thanks to the use of insecticide-treated bed nets and indoor residual spraying. Tanzania, as a whole, has reduced malaria transmission by 60%. Despite this success, the disease is not gone, says Salum Mapuya, a young scientist working at Ifakara Health Institute.
Mosquitoes have gotten a little bit smarter, so they try to feed increasingly outdoors, especially early evening, the time that most of the people outside are doing several activities like cooking and storytelling and others.
Salum Mapuya guides me to a big black wooden box standing next to a hut in the village. It resembles a beehive, but the sides have openings like a window shutter.
So the box has two components. It has a component that lures mosquito towards it, and the other component, it's a killing component. So we came up with this idea of using electrocuting grids, so which is non-chemical technology. So at the time that they want to enter into the box, thinking it's a human being, they will come across these electrocuting grids and they will be dead instantly.
In a previous study inside Ifakara Health Institute's large tent testing facilities, the landing boxes reduced the number of malaria mosquitoes attempting to bite humans by a factor of 4. But when they took the first 3 mosquito traps to Lupiro, the scientists figured out the boxes could bring another benefit to the people in the village, light.
We thought because currently in Tanzania, very like 80% of the community in rural, they don't have access to electricity. And we thought, why not to supply them with electricity if the box can also do it? So it's not like we are trying to convince them to accept the box, but it's because we thought that there is an added advantage of using it in addition to the killing mechanism to the mosquitoes.
Says Nancy Matowo, another researcher from Ifakara. At about $120, the mosquito landing box prototype is still far too expensive for the rural population. The average income in Tanzania is roughly $75 per month. But the scientists from Ifakara Health Institute are working on a cheaper version by making the mosquito landing box smaller and replacing wooden parts with plastic.
That report was written by Julia Gross. Time now to catch up with the world of sports. Chuck Penfold joins me with a wrap-up of the Bundesliga weekend. Chuck, Leipzig finally lost their unbeaten run to bottom-placed Ingolstadt. Many people must have lost their bets on that game, right?
Well, there may be a few people that won some money on that game, too. Really, nobody saw this coming. I even wrote the couple of days before the game, we do a preview on the website. I said, basically, you know, there's absolutely no way that Ingolstadt, they were last in the Bundesliga against the top team, high-flying Leipzig. There's no way they're going to get any points out of this game. And then they got an early goal. It was actually set up by a player who's on loan from Leipzig in Ingolstadt and got that early lead, particularly the second half. Leipzig really pushed hard. Interesting game. I mean, the goalkeeper for Ingolstadt even got injured and had to leave. His replacement was absolutely fabulous, stopped many shots, and they just could not get the goal to pull level. So, yeah, that's why you play the games, I guess.
Yeah, you think this Leipzig player who set up the goal is coming back to Leipzig after that?
Oh, I think so, yeah. It was interesting, of course, as well, because it was Ralf Hasenhüttl's first return to Ingolstadt. He had been the Ingolstadt coach before going to Leipzig in the summer, and I'm sure he was not expecting that sort of welcome.
What impact do you think this defeat on Leipzig would have as we approach the winter break? Do you see them coming out of this defeat?
I think this is just probably a one-off. You know, you knew at some point they were going to get defeated, and I think Hasan Hüttl has proven himself to be a very good coach, and they're actually quite a talented team. So I think this is probably pretty much a one-off. But we'll have to see in the second half of the season. It often happens that a team that's been newly promoted sails through the first half of the season pretty well, and then the second half somehow, I don't know if teams are more prepared for them or what, but they have a harder time in the second half. So that could also happen to Leipzig.
Another big game that happened over the weekend, that was Dortmund versus FC Cologne. They drew 1-1. Marco Reus again rescuing the Dortmunders once again. What do you make of that game?
Well, that was a couple of fairly well-matched teams. Cologne's had a bit of a surprising start to the year. They're doing better than a lot of people expected. But I think Cologne is a team has very good leadership right now in the sporting director, Jörg Schmadtke and Peter Sturga, and they're just gradually progressing. Dortmund, on the other hand, are a team that's really had a lot of trouble with consistency this year. This is a team that expected to be challenging Bayern for the title and definitely getting into the Champions League directly. And, they've just been had good games and bad games. Reus is looking really good again, but they need to get that consistency back.
Moving on to the Bundesliga league leaders, Bayern Munich took advantage of this defeat of Leipzig now, and they lead the tables. Do you see them maintaining that lead for a long time to come?
That's really anybody's guess. In past years, you know, I think last year they were up by about 8 points by this time. The thing that's changed this season, and a lot of that is due to Leipzig, is that the Bundesliga seems to be more even. There's more parity this year, and it seems maybe somebody can actually challenge them for the title. They haven't really been firing in all cylinders so far under the new coach, Carlo Ancelotti. So I think the good news for the fans, unless you're a Bayern fan, I guess, is that things are pretty well open so far this season.
Champions League draw is out now. What do you make for the German teams? Do they have a chance of progressing?
Oh, sure. Just to go over it quickly, Bayern drew Arsenal, who they've faced several times in the past few years. Leverkusen drew Atletico Madrid. That's going to be a real tough draw for Leverkusen, another team that's had trouble with consistency this season. And maybe the easiest draw of all is Dortmund. They finished top of their group. They're up against Benfica.
DW's sports editor, Chuck Penfold.
Now, Kenya at 53.
Kenya at 53, it's not a very major anniversary, is it?
No, it's not. It's not a 50 or 60 or 55
even.
Yeah,
not a major milestone.
But, as usual, Kenyans are making a lot of noise about it on social media and offline as well, because there have been some anti-corruption protests in the capital, Nairobi.
And the hashtag I've seen floating around, Jamhuri Day 2016, that's Independence Day, that's the hashtag. And it's been used also by all official accounts and the people celebrating the country's anniversary. And then there's Take Back Kenya.
Yes, that's a hashtag that was used mainly by protesters today, Take Back Kenya. And there were many people who were very angry and disappointed and asking why security forces tear gas protesters. And one user with the handle at Tururiet wrote, "To be free is not merely to cast off one's chains, but to live in a way that respects and enhances the freedom of others." And Sorimpan writes, irony of policemen who reside in tin roof huts arresting the very people who are demanding better conditions for them.
And also there was, during the celebrations, I understand President Kenyatta also hinted that the country might reconsider or consider leaving the International Criminal Court. This is also something that is probably people have talking, because I know that there are sides, some of who support him and some who are against Kenya leaving the ICC.
Yes, and that has of course been a major topic the whole time since President Kenyatta was himself being investigated by the ICC, and now elections are coming up again next year, so that will definitely be something that many people will be talking about in the time to come if it happens.
It's interesting. Well, while a country like Gambia, which also Jammeh had said that he will pull out of the ICC, now he's almost leaving power if the leaders and the international community pressure him to do so. But on the other hand, we have countries like Kenya and Namibia who are also, you know, like keen on leaving the International Criminal Court.
Gambia is now seemingly heading in the other direction, and people are actually saying with Yahya Jammeh not conceding defeat that they might actually, that the ICC should step in. Fatou Bensouda, who was formerly an advisor to Yahya Jammeh, should step in and do something about it.
All right, almost time for us to go. But before that, here's a recap of our main story. African leaders led by Liberia's Johnson Ellen Sirleaf are expected in Banjul on Tuesday as they seek to put pressure on President Yahya Jammeh to hand over power peacefully. That does it for Africa Link. I'm Crispin Mwakideu.
And I'm Selo Neko.
Goodbye and take care.